How's it going? As usual, thank you very much for checking in. A little background, going back to November of 2017, we were doing a high school football game on TV, Sarah High School against St. Francis of Mountain View, and doing the homework on the starting quarterback for Sarah, found out that Luke Batari was a good player, but also found out he was much more than that. Here's a young man as a high school sophomore who started a nonprofit for suicide prevention for teenagers and mental health awareness as well. Remarkable kid. We'll get his story. Cannot wait. I hope you enjoy him. Here is Luke Batari. Luke Batari, once upon a time a quarterback at Sarah High School, now a high school graduate. How's that feel?
Feels pretty amazing. I mean, just knowing that it's all over, and it's pretty bittersweet to look back at and everything that me and all the brothers went through.
Are you ready for it to end, or do you want to like hang on as long as you can to make that experience go a little bit longer?
Yes, both. I'm kind of ready to move on as far as like school and just the whole atmosphere. But at the same time, I would go back and play football there, and also I'm gonna miss the guys that I went to school with. So it's a little bit of both.
How much is that whole notion of brotherhood? I've got friends that go to De La Salle, so you know they talk about what that experience is like beyond the field and beyond winning games and being successful. It's this family that you create within your group.
Yeah, I think the brotherhood is really something special. I know they have it at De La Salle too, and at Sarah it's really special because you don't see, you know, 200 guys that are as close as each class at Sarah is, and even the whole school together. You never see that, especially in this day and age, because everyone is so distant and on social media or whatever it is. But I think it's really something special. It's something like I can't really explain it. You just gotta go to Sarah, or you gotta work at Sarah to like be in it. But the brotherhood and the relationships and everything that we do together, it's something that I'll never forget.
There's a handful of people in your life that you'll have 30, 40 years. Those guys in that football team will be those guys.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
We've got a lot to talk about with your football career, but more importantly, what you do off the field, which I find pretty remarkable. You started the nonprofit foundation to deal with suicide prevention and mental health awareness for teenagers. And give the audience a little background. I know your story, but get them up to speed into how this came about and what it means to you.
Yeah, so Play for Prevention is focused on raising awareness for teen mental health and teen suicide. And when I was at a very young age, around 9 years old, my parents went through a very nasty divorce, and that put a lot of stress and anxiety on me. And as a result of that, had a lot of depression, and I was just super down at that age. Thank God my mom got me to a therapist and get me out of that hole. But fast forward to April 2017, my sophomore year of high school, one of my girlfriends had committed suicide. And after dealing with my experiences and then seeing her suffer and how it affected the community around us, I was like, drop my stuff, you know, all right, there needs to be something done about this. Someone needs to take action in this area. Someone needs to do something about it. So that's how Play for Prevention started. And it was a process of about 4 months to get it going. And now we're all around the Bay Area.
Were there any warning signs for that girl?
Initially, no, there weren't. I mean, I thought she was, you know, perfect girl, totally cool with herself, not going through anything. But as we got farther into the relationship, there were signs that I saw and warning signs that me and my family saw with regards to like her family and how she was dealing with it. So yeah, I mean, there definitely was.
Looking back at it, do you think, man, I wish I would have noticed this because I could have done this?
Yeah, I think it's natural to do that. I mean, in every situation, definitely. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, I mean, I do what I do. I mean, to grieve with it. But yeah, I mean, you're always going to sit there and be like, man, if I had done this one little thing, if I had done this, if I had done that. And it's just painful to see not only her, but other people that have taken their lives, and just, the one little thing that someone could have done to save their life, or said this or said that, or said something about their sign. So I think it's all a part.
With the numbers on the rise, especially with girls, what can be done to prevent kids from taking their own lives?
I mean, honestly, it sounds kind of low level, but just talking about it with people, get the word out, talking about it with friends, therapists, family. It's just, there's so much of a stigma about mental health, and there's so much of a stigma about suicide that people are afraid to talk about it, because they say that, oh, if you talk about it, you're gonna put it in their head, put the idea in their head, and you're gonna make them think about it. Well, odds are they're already thinking about it. And are you not going to say anything when they're at the lowest of lows? And you'll be like, oh man, I wish I said something 6 months ago. Like, no, you need to talk about it now when it's not as bad as it's going to get. So, I mean, talking about it with people is one of the most relieving things that you could ever do.
While this subject has become such a big part of your life, what are you learning about maybe why this is the way it is? Why are the numbers going up?
I mean, it can be for all sorts of different reasons. In today's society, we're so influenced by technology. We're so influenced by having an image to uphold to others, having to be this person that everyone worships. Everyone wants to be that person that you have to compete with each other for likes on Instagram. You have to look good on Instagram. You got to look good on Facebook. I mean, there's so many different reasons, but I think most of it is just the pressure that's put on us teens today with school and with social media and socially and everything that goes on.
I was thinking about social media, that being a major factor, that when Luke Batari puts his best on Instagram and Facebook, he's putting his best looking prom picture, his best stuff with the football, right? I mean, so people don't see the hidden demons you have. So maybe someone that's got some issues sees you and says, you know what? My life is messed up. I'm not as good as him.
Yeah, it's definitely like that for a lot of people. I mean, people are obviously only going to put out their best on social media because they don't want to be portrayed as the worst. So I think the pressure of that is really what gets the kids' heads.
And you recommend them talking to other kids about it or going to the parents, which is so hard to do for kids. We'll just go right to the top level and say, let's get some professional help.
All of the above, honestly. Getting help, opening up your heart and sharing your feelings is one of the best things you can do to whoever it is, whether it's your older brother, your best friend, your teacher, your parent, your therapist, whoever it is. There's no feeling like pouring out your emotion and getting like some recognition back.
You know, as guys, we're programmed not to do that.
Yeah, it's not good.
Do you have some settings? I know we were talking off the interview with football where you have to stand in front of teammates, in front of your team, and really pour out your heart. How does that help you grow?
I think, that's one of the things that I went through. Like the way that Coach Walsh does it at Sarah, it's totally voluntary. Like, honestly, you're not forced to go up there and say anything, but it's part of the brotherhood that Sarah preaches about. I mean, so if no one wanted to say anything, we would sit there in the chapel for 15 minutes and only the priest would say something, but usually we're in there for an hour and, 30 kids go up and share something, whether it's on the field, whether it's off the field, about the game. And I think that, I was exposed to that my sophomore year, definitely helped me, confidently talk about my struggles and, talk to just men and share with my feelings with men. It's man to man, it's so hard to share your feelings with another guy because you're like, oh, I gotta be tougher than him. I can't be soft around him because he's gonna think bad of me. Well,
Right.
it's one of the strongest things you can do is to show that you're weak, and it's one of the strongest things that you can do to reach out for help.
What was it like for you the first time you had to stand up there? How nervous were you?
The first time I went up there, I walked up there and it was like, it's all totally voluntary again. And I walked up there. I was like, man, maybe I shouldn't have come up here. And then like, I went up there and and I ended up talking for like a couple minutes, but I sat down. I was like, man, that's the start of like many talks that are going to be made in this chapel. And I'm like, I'll never forget that first talk, because that was like the start of my public speaking career right there. Even though it was only in front of like 70 kids and a couple and like 10 coaches, like that was the start of my public speaking career. Got up and I said something like meaningful, something passionate, something like from the heart.
Did you feel good about it, or did you say, oh, I sucked?
No, I felt good about it. I was honestly feeling good that I even got up there and said something, but I think I said something about the game and about our practice energy, something like that. And just even saying that was like, it was kind of a cool feeling.
That prepared you for later in life, because I know I saw a great video of you speaking in front of adults, so people in their 40s and 50s, and here's this little snot-nosed 17-year-old kid, right, telling them about life and how to deal with their teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, that experience, it was pretty crazy for me. Usually, you know, you get the 50-year-old guy who's this big wig. He comes in, he talks to the whole school in an assembly, but it was like you get this 17-year-old kid. He comes in and talks to the assembly of 50-year-old parents. So it was kind of like a reverse process. And it was a super humbling experience for me to do that and share my experiences with them.
I think of being able to identify the troubled kid and what they look like. But you see so many people that look like they've got it all together, right? It looks like they've got everything in place. And they're the ones whose lives are unraveling.
Exactly. I mean, so how many times have you heard about a celebrity that you would never think it would happen to, and they're struggling from mental health issues, or they've just had a crisis in their life or something related to that? I mean, everyone is going through something these days. It's just a matter of whether they're going to talk about it or not.
Do you think, Luke, in your opinion, that medication is too often given as a way to make everything right?
I don't really know like how to answer that. I mean, I know people that have taken medication and it 100% works for them. And I think that's great. But I also know people that it's just like given to them to make the pain go away. But I think you, like, depending on what you've gone through, you never really get over it. So I think that whatever your grieving is, whatever your process of healing is, it needs to be constant. And you need to make sure that you're always up on it, talking to people, or taking your medication if that's what it is for you. So I mean, I think it's whatever is best for you is what is the process that you need to take.
Yeah, maybe you never get over it, but you learn to work through it or work around
exactly.
It or somehow have it empower you.
Exactly. And that can be with medication, that can be with therapy, or even talking to a friend.
What are some of the experiences, Luke, you've had with kids that have come up and maybe spoken to you and said, you know, hey, thanks for making this something that we should all know about?
Yeah, I mean, I've had countless experiences. I mean, when I first started, I had my direct message box was like flooded with like texts and everything, like, thank you so much for doing this. And I swear to God, like, so many people just flat out shared their experiences with me. Some of them didn't even know me, but it was just like so humbling to see, like, man, this person is really like willing to pour out their heart to me. They barely even know me on social media, and it shows that like they're really passionate about it, and they were super thankful that I had done something like this.
What's the next step for you and the foundation?
Well, I think the next step for me, and obviously this plays into the foundation, is getting an education on running a business, because this, if I'm gonna continue to do what Play for Prevention does, I mean, I need to learn how to run a business. It's obviously a nonprofit business, so I need to go to college, get educated on that. But I think the main thing for us is just always keeping in contact with teens, keeping in contact with schools. We're always looking for people to join, and just keeping up the events that we're doing. Always looking for donations for our apparel to, you know, change it up besides the socks. But just keeping up what we're doing. I mean, I think we're on the right track, going to high schools, even at college and middle schools. So, yeah.
Do you think that's the next step for you, to go down even younger to talk to sixth graders, seventh graders?
I mean, yeah, we partner with a couple of organizations that have already, you know, tapped into middle schoolers. So we've kind of already gone down that road. But I think, you know, I feel like middle school is like the main age where it kind of starts, and then high school and even college. But whoever is suffering, we're gonna help them.
I saw some stats about the kids in middle school who are vaping by the time they're in the eighth grade. It just blows my mind. 75%.
Yeah, it's crazy nowadays.
How much is that part of it? And I know it's, we're kind of getting off the mental health part of it, but since you started to go to high school, 14-year-old, and from that point to now at 17, how prevalent is that from beginning to now?
I mean, nowadays I hear about kids in like the sixth grade getting busted at school for vaping, and it's just crazy to think about, like, all the stuff that us kids are flooded with nowadays, technology and all the vape devices and the e-cigarettes and the marijuana and everything that kids are flooded with, like, especially when a kid is going through something, or even if he's not, he's gonna find, like, it's gonna be an outlet for him to go to make him feel some type of way. So it's just crazy to think about everything that is prevalent with us teens nowadays.
What kept you on the straight and narrow when you see friends of yours, neighbors that maybe go off that path? What kept you right when you could have gone wrong?
Honestly, I think it's just who I am as a person. I mean, I feel like I'm very confident in who I am as a person now. I'm very dedicated to my goals, and I never want to make the wrong step to put me in the wrong situation, because you hear it, and it's kind of cliche, but one decision could change your whole life, and it really can. You just never know when it's going to come, and I don't want to put myself, not only myself, but my family, my friends, my teammates, my coaches in jeopardy just because of a dumb mistake that I made, which could have been easily prevented. So I think that's one of the things that has, like, motivated me to stay on the straight and narrow and to keep it pushing forward.
It's such a mature attitude, someone at 17. I saw a picture of you when you're 14 or 15. You just started your first varsity game, I think the third game of the season, and I wouldn't have let you deliver my newspaper at that point. And now you become to this. Hey, what about your evolution as a kid that was a third string quarterback? You're working your way and becoming a starter and eventually a state champion. What has that experience in football meant to you in terms of your growth as a person?
I mean, I think it's I mean, I think adversity is part of who I am. I mean, I've been preparing to be the quarterback of Sarah my whole life, and, like, being third string on the depth chart, I was obviously, like, mad about it, but I also, like, was I knew I didn't deserve it at that time, and I was gonna work for first string, and I kept working, and, like, that's what life's all about. I mean, you're gonna get things thrown your way that you don't always want. It may make you sad, it may make you mad, but it's all about how you react to it and how you choose to rise above it. Because if you just sit there and you're like, "Oh, poor me," like, nothing's gonna happen, nothing's gonna get better. But if you rise above it, whatever it is, whether you got denied from a job, you're not playing on the football team, or whatever it is, how you rise above it and continue to persevere.
Coach Walsh said that sophomore team of yours that got to the state title game and lost was the greatest Sarah team in the history of the school. And he didn't mean the wins and losses. He was talking about the brotherhood and the family. You did get the redemption, though, the next year in winning it all. Not many people get a chance to get a shot to win it back again. What did that mean to you to actually become a state champion your junior year?
Becoming a champion my junior year was definitely, like, one of the best moments of my life. I mean, I kissed that trophy after the game. It felt like I was just, like, risen up to heaven, because everything that I went through as a kid, everything that all the work that I had put in to be quarterback, on top of that, everything that team had gone through that year with all the injuries, all the adversity, our star player going down and we still go win a state championship, all the track workouts that we did over the summer, all the lifting, all the sleds, all the hills that we ran, like, all the work, it's such a great feeling to see your work cut out for you. I mean, we like, I'll never forget that team, just the relationships that we created and the games that we went through. It was just such a special feeling for all of us.
You passed the Freitas's on the all-time passing list at Sarah, along with Tom Brady, but there's still some doubters, right? You're going to College of San Mateo. There's some folks that say, hey, this guy's not big enough. at 5'11". So what's the plan for you as a JC quarterback to get yourself ready to maybe take a step beyond and get to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing for me in junior college is obviously putting on weight. It's never a bad thing to put on weight for me, but I mean, just trusting in the process and keep doing what I've been doing, carry on what I did in high school and put it on the field for CSM. You know, I think there, I mean, I'm not going to make myself grow 5 inches overnight. That's God's work. But if I could do that, I would. But the main thing for me is just keep doing what I'm doing. I mean, I'm not going to let a college coach's word about my height dictate who I am as a football player. So I'm just going to keep having the success that I have and keep winning, keep producing.
You're a young guy, but how familiar are you with Julian Edelman's story, former CSM star?
Oh, crazy story and totally inspiring.
Guy that was a college quarterback, CSM, went on to Kent State, and now wide receiver with the Patriots. Certainly someone you can look up to and say, you know what, it's possible for me to make it happen too.
No doubt. And, like, even now, like, everyone talks about all the work that he put in to get where he is today. But just, I mean, you can see his true self come out. You know, he goes up to Montana with Tom Brady and trains all the time. So it's not only putting in the work to get to where you want to go, it's keep putting in the work to be better than where you want to go and keep achieving greatness. Like, it's one thing to reach your goal and then stop, but it's another thing to reach your goal and then keep working to achieve 6 Super Bowl rings like Brady. I mean, I'm sure he was sitting there at 4 and be like, man, I want to get 2 more.
Right.
Whereas other people would have been like, oh, 4 is good. Like, no.
Know in life that you've never arrived, that you're always growing, always challenging yourself.
Exactly.
Keep that lesson not for your 20s and just your playing career, Luke, but for your entire life.
Yep, definitely. I mean, so many times I hear about, not only from athletes, but, you know, people in the work world, just always continuing to grow, whether it was, you know, leaving another job to go, leaving a job they were super comfortable with and then going to one they're kind of uncomfortable with. But then in 5 years, it was worth every penny. It was worth every tear. It was worth every sweat. So there's so many stories about just continuing to grow throughout life. You should never be satisfied with what you're doing.
I want to make sure some folks in your life get some love for what they've done with your foundation and your life. So first of all, your foundation, in particular, your mom.
Yes, my mom. I mean, without her in my life, I wouldn't be the man I am today, nor would Play for Prevention be the foundation that it is today. I mean, she's what makes me tick. She makes Play for Prevention tick. She makes it all happen, along with working another full-time job, which is pretty crazy. Superwoman right there. So I'd like to thank her. Thank the rest of my family, my grandma, my stepdad, Kevin, my little brother, Dante. Love you guys. Thank you for what you've done. Coach Walsh, obviously. I mean, he's like second father to me, everything that he's done for me throughout my football career and molding me as a person. And I'd like to thank Ron Amos at Sony. I know he's kind of behind the scenes, never out in public, but he does all the work behind the scenes as far as technology, making our social media run, all the pictures that we do. I'd like to give a shout out to him. Thank you for all you do and everyone else that has been involved, whether it's my quarterback coaches, my other mentors, everyone that's been involved, my teammates. I'd like to thank you guys for being so supportive of P4P and everything that it's about.
How did you get hooked up with Brady's dad?
So Tom Brady Sr. I think it was January of last year. I opened my computer, went on my Gmail, and there was an email from Tom Brady Sr. And I was like, holy cow, Tom Brady Sr.'s emailed me. No way, this is crazy. So he's always watching Sarah ever since Tommy went there, but he saw what I was doing on the field and my success there, and then put that together with Play for Prevention, and he nominated me for a Semper Fidelis Marines Academy, which is a 3-day all-inclusive trip paid for to Washington, D.C. and I think there's only about 100 kids that get selected for this, but basically he had nominated me for that because of my story at Sarah and everything. And ever since then, we've created this kind of cool little relationship. You know, I always update him. He's always checking in on me. So that's kind of how we got connected.
We have listeners to this podcast from all over the world, but for me, if just one kid has the message resonate to him or her, then it makes it all worthwhile. So thank you for all you do, young man.
Thank you so much. I mean, we touched one kid on this podcast. That's, we've already done our job.
And count me in for the field pass at College of San Mateo to watch you get off.
Sounds good. I'll get you hooked up.
Hey Luke, let's give out the social media information for folks who want to reach out, find the website, find you through social media, and whether they want to be involved or they just need to reach out and talk to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, we're always open. My direct message is always open on any social media. You guys can find me. Just my name, Luke Batari. And then as far as Play for Prevention, our website is play4p.org. And the rest of our social media, which is Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, is that's all going to be play4prevention, no spaces, no underscores. So anyone that would like to get involved, we're always looking for, you know, ambassadors, people that are passionate about mental health. Anyone like to get involved, reach out to us.
Great stuff, and count me on that list as well, Luke. Okay, I'm in.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Luke, how do I get a pair of those socks?
You're hooked up already. I've got you on lock.
Oh, you're the man. Thanks for your time, and keep doing life the right way.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks so much to Luke Batari. And once again, if we reach even one kid with our podcast, hey, mission accomplished for the day. The executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. We appreciate your positive feedback and comments. It certainly helps out a lot. And as usual, thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.